IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. Today, we thought we would just sit down and discuss about some of the economic measures that has been announced by the finance minister of late. And this has been done in tranches. So we were waiting for the entire picture to become a lot more clearer. I have with me today Sarthak, who will join me to discuss some of these things. Hello, Sarthak.
Hi, Anupam.
So we kind of got a whole lot of measures. I mean, I think the entire country was waiting for this particular aspect. In fact, when even the first lockdown was introduced by the government or was announced by the Prime Minister, we expected that the demand stimulus or some kind of fiscal measures would also be announced. But lockdown one came and went, lockdowns two came and went. And, you know, even after lockdown three, we didn't have any clear picture of what was the big government's plan. And in between, of course, all of us witnessed a massive kind of humanitarian crisis in some sense of migrant workers stranded, a lot of people without food or nutrition. And, you know, that really, I think, accentuated the need for a government to step in and do something. So in light of all of this, we witnessed that finally the finance minister took up the role of doing this. And we had some big announcements. So we are here to discuss some of these things. Just to be kind of clear right up front, we will not be giving you that kind of breakdown in terms of what exactly are they spending on. I think you can open up any newspaper and find that broad breakdown. But I think the more important thing would be what are the big takeaways. So Sarthak, let's start with that. What were your biggest takeaways from these announcements?
So what I observe here is, I mean, the first, they made the announcements for 5 days. First day, there was a lot of focus on MSMEs. And you find out that primarily the government has focused on infusing liquidity into the MSME sector. Now, the second day, there was primarily more announcements related to poor and migrants, farmers, these kind of things were there. And here also, what I find is some allocation was there when it comes to food grains, which was already part of the first package. Apart from that, they are focusing on affordable rental housing. They are saying that we have to improve technology to extend BDS facilities, all these things. But again, I could not find much clarity regarding these aspects. Now, apart from this, there were also some reforms related to different sectors. Reforms, they have announced these reforms in coal sector, in power sector, in private space, all these things. But yeah, we don't have the exact details. When it comes to agriculture, animal husbandry, there was a lot of focus on that. What I found a little weird was there was not specific allocation related to health sector. They have mentioned that we will go for public health reforms, but what exactly are the reforms? I don't think that has been specified here. Only in the first package, they talked about health insurance, but here we did not have all these things. Also, there has been a focus on, apart from liquidity, there has been a focus on tax deferrals, reduction in TDS, Tax Collection at Source. Also, there have been ways, or they have provided some ways by which states can be incentivized to again become Atmanirbhar, as has been mentioned again and again. This was part of the Atmanirbhar package. So again, states can borrow more from the centers, provided they are following certain things. I mean, there is no condition till some point of time, no condition for getting loans from the center. But beyond that, you have to improve on certain criteria. Also, what I found interesting was there has been a public sector enterprise policy. There has been a focus on improving ease of doing business. Those kind of new things are there.
Yeah, thanks for that, Sarthak. I think that gives a nice broad overview of this. My three kind of, or two or three really big takeaways, and which also kind of summarizing the main reactions from economists and academics and other policy experts, is that one, that it is doing decently well in order to stimulate the supply side of the economy. So, you know, from giving tax breaks and giving pension fund support or temporary tax cuts, investing in certain kinds of farm infrastructure or etc. It's not doing as much for the demand side. So we'll discuss about that slightly later. Second big takeaway is in terms of the timeline. So I think one of the big criticisms was that a lot of the things that were announced would only help the economy in a medium to long run situation. Whereas we are having a, again, not to use this thing very mildly, but we are having some form of a humanitarian crisis right now. So there's not much to, you know, do with a near term or, a, you know, immediate kind of reaction. The third one would be on the reforms bit. I think that's a good news aspect that they're really thinking about reforms. Of course, we'll again discuss some of these reforms in a lot more detail as we go on. But I think these are three really big, broad takeaways which people are seeing. And finally, I think the big one actually is that the big economic package as it's been labeled is actually not that big. The government has been saying that it's a 20 trillion or 20 lakh rupees package, which comes to about 10% of GDP. But if you again tear away at the layers and remove some of, you know, the layers and the peel away at the layers, then you will find that the actual outlay is a lot lesser. Right? If you just look at the breakdown, a lot of it, nearly half of the proposed 20 lakh crores is actually just done by RBI in terms of easing loans and injecting liquidity into the system. Now, not that that's not important, but you know, monetary policy is independent. It's supposed to be different. You cannot have a union government taking a credit for what the RBI is doing. So RBI support is actually something like 9.6 lakh crores or something of that sort. So in that range. So that, you know, if you kind of remove that, then it already comes down to a lot lesser. Then you would find that existing programs have been re-christened, repurposed and re-channelized. So, you know, it's not really fresh outlay, but for example, NREGS and a lot of existing, current existing schemes from food procurement, etc. has been relabeled and re-christened. And therefore, that also adds up a significant amount to this. Then you have, of course, credit guarantees and loan guarantees, which are coming, which is again important. But again, if you include that, that again makes this kind of figure dicey, because it's not really an outlay, but you're giving guarantee for a loan which the you know, bank is giving. So in that sense, yeah, it's not really spending money in whatever sense of the word, right? And then finally, I think you need to look at the fact that, you know, if you again remove all of this, what you're left with is about just about 1% of GDP spending. So instead of the 20 lakh crores, I think it comes down to less than about 2 lakh crores that the union government is spending. So I think that is an important thing to analyze. Sarthak, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, since we don't have exact details about many of these things, there are different speculations. So that also makes estimating all these things very difficult. And they have, in many places, you have made the announcements, but what is the exact allocation? How are you going ahead with these allocations? All these things are not specified. So there is, again, we don't know exactly. They have announced the overall package, but the nuances are somewhere missing. That's what I also, when I was looking at all these things, I found this is something that's going to be a challenge for us.
Yeah, I think that's the standard problem that we've always faced in the public finance realm, right? Announcements does not actually ever equal to, you know, outlay in a sense, because in the budget speech, for example, year on year, it's in a smaller scale, of course, or a different kind of event. But every year we've seen that in the budget, you know, a lot of the spending is announced, but if you look at 1 year later as to how much of it was actually spent, it turns out to be a lot lesser. And I think that's an important thing to keep track of. So anyone who's interested should track how much of the announcements are actually being spent, how much of it is, you know, released for spending for by the different thing. Now, on this demand versus supply side, I think it's an interesting point. Now, I don't think anyone would deny the importance of providing liquidity support for MSMEs and any other kind of corporations. It was you know, desperately required. So from tax cuts to, again, pension fund support, etc., I think these were all extremely required. But it will not, even if you give loan guarantees, for example, people would take loans, or rather businesses would take loans only if they're guaranteed that there's a demand for their product. So unless you do something on the demand side, a lot of these things might not end up helping. So what would be some of the things that we could do on the demand side? You know, essentially, it would come down to how do you put more money in the pockets of people, and how do you give them confidence to spend? These are, I mean, in an approach wise, these are the two broadest things that you would have to think about. So you'll have to look at probably individual tax cuts or deferment of tax payments. You could, for example, defer utility payments. You could provide, of course, some form of very targeted UBI for people just so that they have money. You could reduce GST, for example. That's one of the things that could have been done, or introduce a single slab GST instead of four. There's a whole host of things that could have been done to stimulate demand. Unfortunately, not a lot of it was done. Is that right, Chatak?
Exactly. I think TDS is something that they have taken into consideration. TDS, they have more reduced that amount for that. And I mean, that can, to some extent, help in this. Apart from that, the first package talked about giving directed benefits to women, Jan Dhan account holders, and to, again, people who are old or who are disabled. But apart from that, we don't see much happening along these front. So again, demand is going to be a major challenge. If there is no demand, then who is going to consume the products that your industries or the MSMEs are producing?
Especially given that people are now, even confidence in the economy is extremely low. So people are either losing jobs, or they've had a wage freeze, or they've had a wage cut, in fact, or there are people are extremely tentative and scared that they might lose their job.
Yeah, there is extreme level of uncertainty. You don't know how the sectors in which they are operating will function maybe 3 months down the line or 6 months down the line. They would rather prefer to save money than spend it at this point of time. They don't know. I mean, this entire uncertain circumstances.
Exactly. So in situations where you are not sure of how much income stream is going to be there, then you're not going to spend your disposable income on what you would call as discretionary spending, right? On, I mean, now is not the time when people will go out and buy a car or will not go buy AC. So irrespective of how much supply side support you provide to, let's say, auto manufacturers, if there's no demand for them, they will not get in any revenue. So it's important to balance that as well. So wage and income support is one of the things that they could have done in a slightly larger scale, which many of the other countries are doing. I completely understand, and we'll speak about this slightly later, about India's limited fiscal space. But that is one thing that I think could have been done, just to assure people that, you know, help companies not lay off people. You cannot just request them, which I think we did, but you got to, you know, help them retain staff. And also probably provide a little bit of the wages just so that they have a little bit more money. So I think that was an important thing. The next bit was that short term to medium term. And I think, I mean, I'm truly impressed in some sense when a government actually looks at medium to long term over the short term. You know, that's one thing that we always accuse governments of not doing, that they always prioritize short term over long term. But in this case, I think, I mean, so broadly, I really applaud the government. And which is very strange for it to be coming from me, but I applaud the government that they looked at this as an opportunity to truly bring in a lot of reforms. And that is really great. And we look at those reforms, but at least the thinking is, applaudable. But again, for the now, I think they had to do a little bit more to make sure that people don't die of starvation, etc. So free food provision for migrant workers is something they announced. But how do they needed to be greater clarity on how are they going to achieve that. And just looking at the, you know, daily news means that they've not really, I mean, probably it was a bit too late, firstly. And second, it's not enough. Right, Sarthak?
And just to think about it, I mean, the announcement is quite late. I mean, we have been under lockdown for a long time now. And the announcement is coming right now. We know that there was a migrant crisis. We know the extent of migration that takes place in India, but the announcement is quite late, and this announcement is only 2 months. So that is one challenge. On top of that, again, these migrants find it difficult. It's not only about food. There are other challenges migrants face. For example, in many places, one of the reasons migrants are moving out is that do not have money in their hand to pay the rent over there, and that is forcing them to move out. So those kind of things have not been announced. One thing government announced is in the future, they will be introducing a scheme through which affordable rental housing will be provided. But again, this is something which can help you maybe if there is a second wave of pandemic. It is not going to help them right now. So yeah, it is not going to help them right now, right? So migrants face multiple challenges. And that is all the reason why we are having the exodus of migrants, and announcement of food might not resolve all the things.
All right. So we find that it's kind of the entire set of proposals were lacking in the short term. But, you know, just some time back, I lauded the government for thinking about the medium to long term reform. So let's just spend some time discussing that. Again, there's a whole host of reforms that they introduced. And again, these were reforms that were probably started way back in 2001. Many of them were not completed. Many of them were completely dropped from the radar. And now, you know, a lot of people had been clamoring for these reforms in any case. And I think COVID provided that opportunity for the government to go ahead on some of these things where they cannot really be, you know, blamed for doing some of these things. And it's just in order to attract some of the newer investments, attract even companies moving up away from China, and then attract them to India. So in purely in that sense, I'm glad again that they've done some of these reforms. But just a big caveat right up front, you know, not again just to put the dampener immediately as soon as I praise them. But the fact is that some of these reforms had already been announced in the last, let's say, 20 years, and they've been announced multiple times. But unfortunately, none of them have seen through the implementation phase. You know, it's been announced and then everyone pretty much forgets about it. So I think it is crucial that we do not do it this time, right? So that's a big caveat right up front, that announcement again is one thing, but implementation of that reforms and completely seeing it through is an entirely different matter altogether. So, but in any case, let's look at some of the big reforms that were done. I think the biggest one, in according to me, has been labor reforms, right? I think nothing beats labor reforms because that was the toughest egg to crack for the government, for both the union and state governments. You had singular instances of, let's say, Rajasthan government took this up in the 2014-15 and tried to do it with moderate amount of success. Other states tried to follow suit, but none of them really succeeded. But now in one fell swoop, you have, you know, Madhya Pradesh, Uttar Pradesh, and Maharashtra to some extent taking the lead and saying that we're going to, you know, abolish a lot of the labor laws, at least rationalize it. Now, of course, you know, many people are scared that it might create a complete kind of culture of oppression of laborers and so on. And I think there's, you know, enough guarantees that that should not take place, or rather the only role of the government should be in order to avoid the worst forms of oppression. But by and large, if you let the labor market work, we've always been saying that it's going to help a lot in terms of bringing about greater employment, and we are having an employment crisis. There's no two words about it. It'll bring about, of course, higher GDP growth and economic growth rate, and of course, increase in income. So it's very, I think, important to see how this will pan out, how whether other states follow suit, and whether and unfortunately, I think every state, and this could be a political move, but every state also mentioned that this is going to be a suspension of the labor laws for 2 or 3 years. Now, according to me, that will not really work. You have to do permanent changes because if I'm even a shoe company, for example, which is manufacturing in China and wanting to come to India, I will definitely look at a longer term horizon than just 3 years. So I have to be guaranteed that, you know, you're not going to take away labor laws now and then bring it back 3 years later, and then my entire plans of production will go by the wayside. So so that's one of the changes that has to be made. But I think that's one of the biggest reforms that that had to be introduced at this time. States took the initiative, which again I'm glad of, and I think the union government now should encourage more states to do the same. Sarthak, what was the biggest reform according to you?
Not biggest, but yeah, there are so many things happening. So one of the things I feel is important is the way they have now changed the classification of micro, small, medium enterprises. So previously it was on the basis of investment. Now they have included one more criteria. They have included turnover over there. So when you are including turnover, that means you are including revenue. It's easier to gauge what is the size of these MSMEs, and this will also incentivize MSMEs to go for higher investment. And the total investment criteria has also been changed. Previously, MSMEs, the investment criteria was much less. Now they have increased it almost four times, two to four times. So it will incentivize MSMEs to become larger. At the same time, the distinction that was there between manufacturing enterprises and service enterprises, all these things have been changed now. So this might help improve the efficiency, the productivity of our MSMEs. So this is one thing I feel was good. Apart from that, when it comes to agricultural sector, now here also some announcements have been made. For example, the government has announced that the Essential Commodities Act, it will be now, it will not be used, or it will be diluted, it will be amended. So some food products, some food stuff like cereals, oil seeds, pulses, they will be deregulated. Stock limits and all these things will be diluted.
I think with the Essential Commodities Act, I was one of the happiest persons to read about that. And, you know, I've been a detractor of this concept of essential commodities. For me, I was a tad disappointed. I don't think you should completely abolish something called the Essential Commodities Act. Any person must have the freedom to sell anything that they want in any place, in any market of their choice. So if export markets give you the best kind of returns, then you should be able to export your product. Even in times like this, I would say do not put export bans on masks, for example, right? That's how you'll actually increase production. Or sanitizers, or whatever it is. So completely remove this archaic and completely dysfunctional notion called the Essential Commodities or the Essential Commodities Act, and just, you know, let people sell wherever and whatever they want, right? So that, I think, was essential. Abolition of Essential Commodities Act is essential.
I completely agree with you. And apart from that, another marketing reform also, they announced that they will create a central law which will now give more choices to the farmer to sell their produce anywhere. Now we have different kind of barriers imposed because of APMC, different state level APMC laws. So there has been an announcement that interstate trade barriers will be reduced. I don't know how much it will be implemented, but yeah, so it sounds good at present.
This is again one of those things, unfortunately, that has been announced multiple times but has never been implemented. There is hope this time. I mean, I sincerely hope that they completely get rid of these agricultural mandis, and I mean, let them be, but you can't give them monopoly rights or monopsony rights, right? So let it be as one of the procurers which the government provides, but the farmer must be able to, or have the freedom to sell their produce pretty much anywhere in the country. If not, actually, pretty much anywhere in the world, in fact. If you remove Essential Commodities Act, then you give them freedom to sell at whichever place is providing the highest revenue and income, right?
When it comes to the power sector, I mean, they have announced that all the power department utilities in the union territories will be privatized. And they are in the notification itself, they mentioned that this is going to improve the service to the customers, this will improve efficiency. So indirectly, they are considering the fact, or indirectly, they're acknowledging the fact that when government handles these things, it is inefficient. And
that's an interesting kind of submission, saying that we will privatize and therefore increase customer. If that recognition was there, then I think you should have done this long
ago. That's good enough. I mean, at least that's good. The recognition is also important. And they suggested that we have to have tariff policy reforms. We have to this is not very clear, but they're saying that we have to ensure that whatever inefficiencies is there at the level of the discounts should not be, the consumer should not be burdened for these things. There should be if there is load shedding, there should be penalties for that. But yeah, I was also wondering why all these things are included at this point of time. Maybe we could have focused on something else, but these things are also part of the package which has been announced right now.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, it might not have direct or any relation with COVID, but there's no bad time to do a good deed, right? So in that sense, if they're going to do power sector reforms, I'm just kind of happy, let them do it. It's not really that it's going to take away the priorities from this, away from something else into this. So it's just a very simple thing. I mean, you could even allow for privatization of DISCOMs. I mean, according to me, you should have multiple DISCOMs fighting and competing with each other to provide power. And this can happen. It already happens in multiple parts of India. I mean, Mumbai, for example, Gurgaon, etc. You have a competitive kind of structure of the industry. And there's no reason why that should not be pan-India. So that was kind of encouraging because you will see that you know, once you do that, it will also reduce the stress on the state government, it'll reduce stress on the banks, it'll reduce stress on a lot of things, and it'll truly improve, you know, the distribution of power. So that, I think, is completely essential. Some of the, I mean, since you spoke about privatization, I think I was also impressed that they're looking to privatize a lot of other industries as well. For one, they're just looking to increase FDI limits on a lot of things, including on defense products, etc., but even internally, I think they're looking to liberalize a whole bunch of things, which is interesting. I mean, for coal mining, for example, was one of those things. Civil aviation, which includes even airports and many other parts of the civil aviation industry. They were looking, of course, at power discoms. They were looking at space exploration. For me, that was an extremely interesting thing, since Takshila works on it. We're looking at privatizing space exploration. So these are, I mean, very encouraging signs, and I really hope that they stick through with it. We end, I think we should just speak about some of the big things they missed out on. While they've covered a whole set of things, there's just a couple of things that I thought was missing. One is purely on the, you know, on the spending side. I think, there was no big announcement on infrastructure spending. And I mean, both physical and new age digital kind of infrastructure. So I was slightly disappointed to see that, because, you know, if you're spending money, we know that infrastructure spending, or generally capital expenditure, will give you the highest kind of rate of return in a sense. That is, for every 1 rupee spent, you know, on CapEx, you tend to have a multiplier effect of 4.8 or 4.9 or something on those lines, which means that, you know, that's the highest kind of return. So, you know, this was again an opportunity, and it is not just one of those vague opportunities, but it's extremely related to COVID. One, as I said, it just gives you a higher return, but it also provides a lot of jobs, and the government will, you know, will have to see the implementation of it, of course, but it can create a lot of jobs. It can create a lot of, you know, positive externalities to the entire economy, right? Better roads means better lowering transaction costs, etc. So I was kind of really disappointed to see there was no big announcement on, you know, expansion of the road network, building new ports. They briefly spoke about airports, but not a lot. But or even, you know, new age in infrastructure. Are we even thinking about 4G penetration throughout India? What are we? Are we thinking about 5G? Are we thinking about public Wi-Fi? Are we thinking about better, power distribution to rural areas and so on? So these are some of the things I think was missed out.
Yeah. So another thing I feel was missing in this entire thing was sector-specific interventions. Travel and tourism sector, aviation sector, this is going to be the worst hit because of this pandemic. And we do not have any specific intervention here. Benefit of doubt given to the government, if they're considering a large part of the tourism sector under MSMEs. But apart from that, we don't see much interventions. And when it comes to civil aviation, the government has talked about creating airports. It has talked about making India a global hub for maintenance and other repair, maintenance, other activities. But apart from that, we have not seen anything else. In many countries, what they have done, they have given specific stimulus package for the civil aviation sector. So that was also not there. Apart from this, when it comes to public health, again, we don't, this is a pandemic. I mean, we have to focus on that. And when we are talking about increasing support to infrastructure or building infrastructure, public health infrastructure should have been a part of that as well. We need to focus on that.
Not just part of it. It had to be top priority.
It has to be top priority right now. So that was also not there.
Yeah, I think that those were the biggest misses. I mean, tourism sector, given its employment generation capacity, etc., and the fact that it has been impacted the most, there was literally next to nothing in order to support it. And then, as you correctly said, I think healthcare was the biggest miss, one of the really biggest miss. I'll probably, you know, end with the, I mean, my biggest rue of it all is that, a lot of the reform package, as we had mentioned earlier, is dependent on banks. It's dependent on, who gives the loan and basically underwriting loans. Many times it's forcing banks to give out loans without any collateral, et cetera, so a lot of it depends on the banking sector. And there was absolutely nothing that spoke about the reform of the banking sector. And we require that. So it did mention that some of the PSUs and PSU banks can be merged, et cetera. I know they're not going to privatize it immediately, or they might think of merging it, et cetera. But I think you needed a comprehensive banking reforms, right? One is, you know, basically how do you give a clean slate to many of the banks in terms of, let's say, having an Indian version of TARP, which, you know, we've spoken about before, that is a troubled asset relief program, basically buying off the bad debt and the NPAs from banks just so that they have more money to lend and more confident to lend out. Because if you don't do that and you have a banking crisis going on, which we do, and there's no reforms in the banking sector, then expecting banks to step up and give out all of these loans is completely foolhardy. That will just not work. Banks are scared to lend now. They have a lot of troubled assets on their balance sheets. Therefore, they will not lend. So irrespective of what directives you give them, they will just basically not lend. And therefore, that will completely ruin the entire set of plans. So banking reforms are something that I really wanted to see, whether it is recapitalization of banks, or build a bad bank kind of thing, or my favorite, a TARP kind of this thing. Some form of banking reforms had to be done. And I think by and large, a large-scale privatization of banks was also desperately needed. Not a merger, not any of those cop-outs. But I mean, apart from, I think, State Bank of India, there's no reason why any of the banks have to remain public. You know, you could privatize all of those banks. But that's, we have to wait and watch what happens on that front. All right, so on that note, I think we can probably call it a day. It's been a long episode, so we apologize for that. But these are, you know, really big topics. So thank you so much for tuning in and listening to this episode. Do join us again tomorrow. Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach Podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week, Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.